Hi, this is Mark Senek at INFDA. A week ago Friday, the FDA issued 14 untitled letters that went out to a number of companies respecting the issue of paid advertising on search engines. Many of us take issue with the issuance of those letters because they really were the exercise of issuing policy through a warning letter or untitled letter mechanism that perhaps is not the best way to go about setting policy. This week I'm being joined by Arnie Freed, who is counsel at McDermott Will & Emery and former senior counsel at Pfizer. He's an FDA expert and has been around the block more than once on issues regarding FDA authority. And today we're going to talk about those 14 letters. Thanks for joining me, Arnie.
Thank you so much, Mark. Let me start off by saying that FDA is taking the view that these paid advertisements, which are essentially sponsored links where a pharmaceutical company purchases search terms and then in response to the entry of those search terms, a link with some accompanying information appears in a particular section, say, of the Google website. And FDA is taking the view that the information that appears in these sponsored links, which is limited by characters on the order of 90 characters, is in and of itself a regulable advertisement, which means that, at least according to what FDA is saying in the letters, that they need to contain all of the mandatory information, particularly all of the risk information that is required of full-blown product advertisement, since the names of the products are mentioned at least in the accompanying web links. In other words, what FDA is saying is that they will not consider the landing page, that is the linked information, in determining whether the advertisement as a whole does or does not comply with the requirements of the Food and Drug Act. And so that's the position they are asserting, and in this respect, their approach of focusing only on the information that's in the sponsored link, on the face of the sponsored link, is really quite at odds with the approach that they've taken in a variety of other contexts. For example, in the context of help seeking and reminder ads, they have taken the view that despite the lack of immediate proximity between a help seeking and a reminder ad, you could, in theory, combine the two in determining that the two together, even though placed in different parts of a magazine or placed with some intervening matter on a television show, are not immediately adjacent to one another. And there's certainly a very strong view in a variety of contexts that you look at the entire milieu in determining the meaning of an advertisement. Of course, the thought is that if you look at that in determining the meaning of the ad, you ought to likewise look at it in terms of what is the advertisement in the first instance. So the thought is that by focusing only on the literal language that's on the face of the sponsored link, FDA is ignoring the contextual way in which these appear. After all, the entire purpose of a sponsored link is to have the information seeker click on the link, and if the information seeker does not click on the link, then the information that was provided wasn't sufficiently persuasive to compel them to do so. So I think there's a very credible argument that one ought to look at both the information on the face of the sponsored link as well as the information on the landing page in determining whether, as a whole, these do or do not comply with the risk disclosure requirements, and that by focusing simply on the words in the sponsored link as such, FDA is really ignoring the reality of how this information is utilized. Moreover, I think that there is a very strong public policy argument that by effectively precluding folks from putting any brand names, even in the web link, on a sponsored link, FDA would thereby diminish the priority that would be accorded these sponsored links, and hence consumers searching for relevant information on the Internet would be much more likely to access all manner of information that is utterly unregulated by FDA instead of linking to information on a very well validated FDA-regulated website. There's the further point that I think you alluded to earlier, Mark, about the process. I mean, it seems somewhat strange that after being encouraged for many years to develop a policy or guidance on Internet advertising, that FDA would elect to make policy, in the way that it did in the through enforcement actions and not through through some sort of deliberative, such as either notice and comment rulemaking or at least at a minimum the development of guidance with an opportunity for public comment. So I think that both on the substance of the agency's approach as well as on the process by which it has been tendered to the public, there are substantial grounds to take issue with what the agency has done here.
I couldn't agree more. Let me just ask you one follow-up question, and that is, one of the things that confounds me is that the use of sponsored link ads is not new. It's been going on literally for years. And I'm curious as to what you think. What would compel the FDA on a single day to issue 14 letters covering a number of drugs when the policy has existed, or not the policy, but the practice has existed for so very long that one could almost assume by virtue of the fact that they let so many years go by without saying a word that the practice was in fact acceptable?
Well, I think that that what we're seeing is the sort of ascendancy of DDMAC, the Division of Drug Marketing, Advertising, and Communications, at least in its own view, in terms of strongly regulating prescription drug advertising. One can take the view that throughout much of the Bush administration, DDMAC was somewhat quiescent. They were required to do things like get their letters reviewed by the chief counsel's office, but that over the last 6 to 9 months in particular, as we've seen increase in a variety of areas of enforcement, one could speculate that DDMAC is basically feeling its oats and thinking that in this new, now Democratic administration, that there'll be a much stronger appetite for stronger and more and quicker enforcement action. That's the only rational explanation that I've been able to come up with about why all of a sudden 14 letters need to come out on a single day in lieu of at least floating a policy out there that people have been begging for the longest time.
Right. I mean, it just seems like there ought to be a statute of limitations on inaction by the FDA, that if something goes for so many years without any regulatory action, it does become acceptable practice.
As we used to argue when I was at FDA, latches or the concept of delay or inequitable delay doesn't apply against the government. So the fact that they've done nothing for the longest period of time will not help you, at least in litigating a court case in terms of arguing that the current action is unwarranted.
Right. But that doesn't make it fair.
Doesn't make it fair, and life is not fair.
No, I guess not. Listen, I really want to thank you for joining me today. I think this is a great podcast.
Thank you.
And I look forward to another time.